We're still in our series, Foolish Love, that we're in for the Lenten season. And we have recognized that God's love for us was abundant, is abundant, lavish, extravagant. And depending on your perspective of it, well, somewhat foolish. God's love for us is foolish in this. Jesus came humbly to a people full of selfish ambition. Today, as we look into this reading from Mark chapter 10, we see some selfish ambition. Ambition is something that we see quite regularly. There's a basketball tournament going on right now. Not sure if you've noticed. Then there's 68 teams got into this tournament earlier this week, with the ambition of being national champion. Everybody wants to accomplish that. So if you're, you know, one of the 68 teams, the idea is we could possibly get there. We could do this. Now, if you're a number 16 seed, historically, your odds are very, very slim because number 16s don't ever beat number 1 seeds until Friday night. And it happened. So we, you know, have this ambitious 16 seed that didn't do what they were expected to do. And you know what they did in the process? They wrecked my bracket. I picked Virginia to win the whole thing. My ambition was to be, you know, number 1 in my small group of extended family in this pool, right? Maybe you are in a pool. It's just for bragging rights for us. And my darn nephew, that kid, he's almost 20. He's still a kid to me. He picks them. Man, I don't know how he does it. It was either last year or 2 years ago. I was just sailing along doing really well. My bracket was just almost perfect. Felt very good. Until it went from to the Final Four, and like 3 of the 4 teams that I picked to make the Final Four lost. My bracket was wrecked, and here came my nephew Anthony with all the answers. So he titled his this year, "This is the Answer Key." He didn't pick UMBC either, though. That's right. We have ambition. We have personal desire. In our workplaces, there's an ambition to succeed, and it's pretty typical for us to want to be recognized, to want to get promoted, to want to move our way up the corporate ladder. We want to get somewhere. We want to do something. We're ambitious. We want to look over at the person next to us and think I'm maybe doing a little better than that person. It affects us, affects me at least, in my driving habits. Maybe do you drive like I do? Where if you pick the lane that's moving and not the lane that's stopped, you feel better. Yeah. I mean, who wants to sit there and watch the other guys go by? I should be over there. So Friday night, not this past Friday, but the week before, a group of students and I were going, and a couple others, were going over to the confirmation retreat that we did at a camp in the mountains down close to Watsonville. And so we're leaving, and it's Friday afternoon. And is there a worse time to be on the road than Friday afternoon? So it's Friday afternoon, and there's gridlock on the freeway, of course, and it's, I don't know, like 4 o'clock. But I'm not driving alone, so you know what that means. You can work your way over and finally make it to that diamond lane. And I even said this to Gina, haha, now I feel pretty good about how things are going because we might be going 30, right, is all. But those people are going like 8, so I'm feeling good. And so I appreciated that she was with me at that point. You know, if we're making good time, if we're feeling successful, if we're feeling like we're accomplishing something, that's part of our ambition. It's part of who we are. We look out for number 1, which is human nature. It's in us. It's built into our nature to look out for number 1. Some of that is because it's necessary. Sometimes survival depends on it. We have to take care of ourselves. It's important to take care of yourself and to get the things that you need and to, you know, well, Among those announcements that maybe you don't listen to either anymore, when you get on a plane and you sit down and they show you how the seatbelt works, one time I said out loud, "Oh!" As if it was my first time, like buckling a seatbelt. I mean, I guess it's, you know, that's the "we told you how it works" thing that the airlines do. I guess that's why they do that. Kind of like putting warnings on the top of the coffee, "caution hot." Really? Okay. Thanks for that, Captain Obvious. You know, click. But the other thing that they tell you when you're not listening and you're thinking about, what should I get to drink today, is when the oxygen mask, you know, in the event of a sudden loss of cabin pressure, oxygen masks will drop from the ceiling or whatever it is they say. I don't listen either, so I just have part of it memorized. And what do they tell you to do, though? Put yours on first, right? Why is that? If you're passed out in the aisle, you're in the way and you're not helpful. So they don't want either of those situations. So put yours on first. It's good for survival. It's good for self-care. We have to take care of ourselves first, and it's important, right? But sometimes our survival instinct can turn into a selfishness. There's a line, and we can cross that line without even realizing that we did. When we go from self-care to selfish, it's easy, and it's in our nature. Our self-preservation instinct can take over. And in the process, we might leverage relationships for our benefit. Maybe you've heard this expression. It's not what you know, it's who you know. Sometimes it's absolutely who you know. I used to work as an engineer, as many of you know, and when I did, I had a who you know moment. Actually, a couple of them. I think the last two engineering jobs that I got were because of someone I knew. My resume got dropped on the engineering manager's desk because of who I knew. My friend Dave's dad worked in the same department. He knew they were looking for somebody. I didn't know that. It was who I knew. My resume ended up there. I got that job. The job before that, I got a phone call out of the blue. I wasn't looking, but the company I was working for had just, within like 2 days, said, "We'd like you to move from here. We're moving our operation to Chicago." Now, Chicago's a great place to visit, but I didn't really want to live there because they have all this traffic and it's crowded. Oh, wait. I didn't want to live in Chicago. They also said you could go to Atlanta. Well, this was Atlanta before the 1996 Olympics, so I would have been there for all of that excitement and crowd and traffic. So there's a running theme here. And the other place they asked me that I could go was Pittsburgh, and I wasn't that interested in Pittsburgh either, and I get a call from a friend of mine who said, "There's a company looking for someone who does what you do," and I got the job. So sometimes, you know, who you know is really helpful. Other times, well, I mean, even we get things or can, you know, get to do things, experiences, you know, people share things with one another. I got to sit courtside at an NBA game one time because of who I knew. A guy that had courtside seats. We were at the game, and we were up in the rafters. And this was at the Oklahoma City Thunder Arena, and every game they would have kind of a poster contest thing, and you had to put the bank logo or something on it. And so Gina and Max made a poster, and the game was going on, and they got to that place, and they told everybody, "Hey, pull out your bank poster things, and, you know, let's see who the winner is." And I forget what you won, like a $100 thing or whatever. And so the kids, like, go down from the rafters to this place in the aisle where they could stand, because I don't think the tripods let the cameras go that high. To where we were sitting. So they ran down there, and they're jumping up and down, and they've got their poster, and the camera found them. And now they're on the Jumbotron thing right there in the middle, and there they are jumping up and down, and it's all fun and exciting. And then I get a text within like a minute. "Are you at the game?" See, my friend Paul, who was sitting courtside, looked up on the screen and saw the kids and asked if I was there. "There's seats around us. You could come down here." Okay. "Where shall we meet you?" And he gave me the lanyard, and I got to go, and I got to sit courtside. And, you know, sitting courtside in an NBA game, you recognize these guys are enormous. Like, they could try to put more than 10 on the court at a time, but they'd be running into each other because these are big men. You know, even the ones who look little are still big because your perspective is thrown off. 7-footers just mess with your head, right? So I got to do that because of who I knew. Got to go to a cabin in the woods because of who we knew. Somebody who had one that said, you can use it. And it was great. And those benefits are fantastic. Sometimes, you know, the things that you get to do, the experiences you get to have, you know, the places maybe you get access to or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with that. Until it turns into something that we expect or a relationship that we try to leverage for our own benefit. James and John were a couple of guys who were close to Jesus. The big three, it was Peter, James, and John. So I get this like imaginary conversation going between James and John. Hey, let's cut Peter out. Let's go to Jesus, and, you know, there's really only a right hand and a left hand. You got two hands, you got two important things. Let's do this now. And so they did. And they asked Jesus in the way that kids sometimes ask the question. Parents, have you ever had your kids ask a question like that? Will you do me a favor? What do you want? Just say yes. That's always the I'm suspicious now kind of feeling, right? This is kind of how they ask it. What did they say? Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. What? And so Jesus says, well, what is it you want me to do, right? He responds in the same kind of way. What is it that you want? So we look out for number one. We leverage our relationships. You know, sometimes we act almost if God is like the genie in the lamp. That we can come to with, hey, here's what we want. Do this. You ever pray that way? Hey, we all do. In some way. And again, this can be done okay. This can be just fine. God wants to know our desires. He seeks from us to pray with the desires of our hearts. To bring our requests, to bring our desires to him. And many, many, many times there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. God knows us anyway, so it's not like, you know, hey, surprise, God, I want this. And he goes, really? You know? But we almost act like, okay, God, here's my laundry list of things that I desire. Take care of all that for me while I go over here and do my own thing. While I just, you know, also take care of me. You take care of me, and I'll take care of me, and then I'll be happy, and everything will be great. And when we step back from that, and we realize that we've done that, and we also realize that life isn't like that, see? Life isn't like that, that we would just get the things that we want. James and John said, they said to him, grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory. We seek positions of prominence. We want to sit at the head table or the center table, or at least not at the kid table. Did your family do that, like Thanksgiving? Gather everybody together, and grandma and grandpa are there, and all the aunts and uncles, and then there's a bunch of cousins, and the cousins all sit at the kid table. And then, you know, gradually you work your way up, and you remember that first time you sit at the, you're not at the kid table anymore. You feel kind of important, and then you realize, gosh, the kid table was fun. These adult conversations are not that fun. But we want to be in a position of prominence. We want to get promoted. We want to have advancement. And there's nothing wrong with that. As long as we keep the right perspective. Dwight Eisenhower was the 34th president of the United States, and he tells a story as a young boy in Kansas. He was fishing with a friend of his. And so, you know, they're drowning worms and having conversations. And they're talking about the things they want to do. Now, if you ask kids what they want to do, typically the answers include something pretty significant. The Olympics were on not that long ago, so probably a whole lot of kids wanted to be, you know, I want to be a bobsledder, I want to be a skier, I want to be this kind of athlete, or I want to, you know, have this kind of position, or I want to be a rock star, or all the things that we want to do when we're young and invincible. And we think, you know, everything's going to be great and everybody can accomplish anything that we want. Well, Eisenhower is having that kind of conversation, and he talks to his friend, and his dream was to become a professional baseball player. His friend had the dream of becoming the president of the United States. And Eisenhower reports, neither of us got what we wanted. We want positions of prominence. We want to make advancements. And, you know, pastors are no different. I know that there's friends of mine and colleagues of mine or the people that I went to the seminary with who are doing stuff that I'm like, wow, that's a cool opportunity he got, or he gets to go to this place and be a featured speaker, or that guy's on the stage at the National Youth Gathering, and why don't I get those opportunities? But when I get one of those moments, I realize this is where God wants me to be, and it's great, and this is fantastic. And so I need to be ambitious for this place. In the process of our ambition, we might overestimate our abilities, the things that we can do. We might embellish a resume. There was a commercial, Monster.com had this on, it's probably 10 years ago or more. Maybe you remember it. It was a series of little vignettes with kids. And this is one of them. He looks like that. And I want to work my way up to middle management. You remember that? I want to file all day long. I forget what the other ones were, but they were just really funny. Kind of like, you know, here's my goal. Most kids my age have goals way up here. I'm shooting for this. Aim for mediocrity. That's not what we're encouraging. That's not the message today, is to aim for mediocrity or not have a goal or a dream or to be seeking to be promoted or successful. Because, let me say it again, there's nothing wrong with being successful or having this ambition. But we all tend to think we can maybe accomplish more than we can. We've had the picture of the peacock on our screen the last couple of weeks. And here's another peacock moment. Here's James and John with, yes, we can do it. We overestimate our abilities. Here's what they said. Jesus, are you able to drink the cup that I drink, be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? And they said to him, we are able. Here's my tail. I can do it. Right? I can accomplish that. What's Jesus' response? Well, that's what I think of Jesus in that response. Well, you don't get it. You don't understand. Not so fast. Because you don't know what it means to be at the right and the left in the glory. You don't understand what that moment is going to look like. You're anticipating something far different from what the reality is really going to be. When we look at Jesus' reality, we see that Jesus walked a road of humble obedience. His entire life was going in a single direction. His life was oriented toward the cross. Verse 32, at the beginning of our reading, there was a couple of words that are really easy to just pass over because we hear it and we just get a context for where this conversation would have happened as we look at those words. It says, as they walked on the road, or something to that effect. The book of Mark has that a number of times, on the way or on the road. And while it sets the context for where this happened, so Jesus and the disciples were walking along the road, okay? So it's probably one of those roads that the Romans made, and they're still there. So you can go look at them. They're still there, and they're walking on the road, and they're having this conversation. But the road that Jesus was on was always the road leading toward the cross. He was always going in that direction, especially in the book of Mark. The way that he writes it, it's almost like, remember, Jesus is going to the cross, and here's something that happened. So Jesus is on his way to the cross, and this is what happened. And he even tells them what's going to happen. This is immediately before this whole James and John episode. This is what he said. we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles, and they will mock him and spit on him, flog him, and kill him. Really, James and John, can you drink the cup? Yes, we can. Well, maybe you didn't hear me. This is what's going to happen. This is what this is about. Jesus' cup of suffering overflowed. Everything that said that he said was going to happen happened soon after this conversation, the way that the narrative continues. It wasn't long later that everything took place. He suffered, he bled, he died. And when he did, there was one on his right and there was one on his left. And it wasn't James and John. It was two for whom it was prepared. Because as Jesus came into his glory, it didn't look like what James and John imagined. See, his kingdom was different from expectations. His crown was a crown of thorns. His throne was a cross. He didn't come in and take over by force. He came to establish a kingdom according to God's plan. James and John likely expected positions in the new realm, in the new kingdom that's going to come in, and let's take over Jerusalem and let's make this happen. We'll be chief of staff and secretary of state or whatever. And that's not what God had in mind. That's not how it continued. That's not how it happened. He didn't free Israel from captivity by force. But through his suffering, his death, he frees us from being captive to sin. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom. As a ransom for all of us in our selfish ambitions and our hopes and our dreams and the things that we buy into that the world is selling. He came to give his life as a ransom for that. So ambition, if it's continually and exclusively self-focused, is in the kingdom foolish. But ambition in the kingdom of God is different, and it is good. So strive for greatness in the kingdom. Strive for greatness in the kingdom. There's a couple things about this text, and, you know, I think Jesus had the, well, moment with James and John. The other disciples, though, they were indignant, the text says, at James and John. You know, these two had the audacity to bring it up. We all wanted that spot. So the other 10 guys were like, really? They were kind of ticked. So it wasn't just James and John, actually, that felt that way, that had that desire. And Jesus responds quite unexpectedly. Jesus called them to him and said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you." Verses 43 and 44 that we heard read from Mark 10. "Whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all." Jesus primarily is talking about himself. He was the servant. He was the slave of all. But he's encouraging them toward a kingdom ambition. Encouraging his disciples, if you want to be great, do it this way. Be great in the kingdom. Be humble. Jesus was humble. He humbled himself and was obedient even to death on a cross. That's what Paul writes to the Philippian church. He humbled himself. He took on flesh. He left it all for us. And he calls us now to be humble. C.S. Lewis wrote it this way: humility isn't thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. So we can celebrate our accomplishments. That's good. We should. We can be proud of the things that we've accomplished and of our kids and the things that they've done. But we keep a different perspective. It means to live differently from the world. I took this picture at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. There's a fish kind of, it's right there, if you can see where I'm pointing. It's swimming the other way. The rest of the fish are going to our left, and there's one that's going left to right. And so I snapped this picture. This was a few years ago. I took that. There's a commercial. If you've been watching basketball, you've probably seen it. There's a Nike commercial that's been on. I've seen it like four times. And the start of it is that the world has stopped rotating. Have you seen this commercial? That the world has stopped. And so this woman grabs her Nikes. Of course, because it's the Nike commercial, and she puts them on, and then she's going to start running, and she's like, let's go, and so other people will start running. And so they're all like running together, and Kevin Hart, who's a comedian, he's running the opposite way. And he's like, wait, where's everybody going? And so he turns around, and he gets in with the crowd as they're going, and goes that way. And they have Bill Nye come on there and say, well, you know, the world's going to start rotating again because of the force of everyone running. And so it's like, let's go, and everybody's going to run, and we're going to get the world moving again. And then the same newscasters that have just said that the world is going the wrong way, the world has stopped, they say, and now everyone's running the wrong way. So then everybody has to turn around and go back. And Kevin Hart's like, I knew it. But you turned around, Kevin. Do you know the world's going the wrong way? Do you know that the world is running hard in the wrong direction, seeking all kinds of things? And we have what we need. We have in Jesus everything we need. So we can be ambitious for the kingdom because we have what we need. We can live differently from the world because we already have what we need. The world values success and achievement and rewards the proud. And we can still celebrate those things, but we can keep our perspective. We can continue to be humble. And ultimately, we can serve others because that's what greatness in the kingdom looks like. To be humble, to be servant, to be even slave of all. A couple weeks ago, we had Milpitas Cares event. So a group of people just went out and picked up litter off the side of the street and the sidewalk, and it was a great way to serve the community. Last weekend was the respite event, where a group of people met with students and young people who had disabilities and supported them and their families. And it was a great way to make a difference. A few weeks ago, we had the Teen Challenge event where people were fed. There was a meal provided and connections made with people who are struggling with addiction issues and substance abuse things through Teen Challenge. They're getting that help that they need. And it can make a difference. Those are great things that can be done through the congregation, but there's a bunch of other ways that we can serve others. It doesn't have to happen through some organized way that we, put it in our announcement things and we make a plan and we gather volunteers and we do things. You can do it today with somebody who needs you. Maybe there's somebody that needs a friend. Maybe there's someone who needs just to be heard. How many people just need to be heard? Just need to share a story, just need to share a moment. Maybe it's someone who's new to the community and they just need to know somebody cares. Maybe it's somebody who's aging and their family members are across the country and nobody's coming around and they just want to make a connection. That's a great way to serve. Be a friend. Maybe it's for kids, whose parents are both so busy chasing the world, they don't have time. They need somebody to read a book. They need somebody to help them out. Maybe it's a single parent, so it's, you know, one person who's trying to survive this economy in this area in which we live. And you can make a difference. And the list could go on and on and on, because our world has needs. And we can help. Let's be ambitious in the kingdom to make a difference in somebody's life. It doesn't have to be on the grand stage. It doesn't have to be the opportunity that, you know, gets published someplace. Nobody even has to know. Let's be ambitious toward the kingdom and make a difference, because that's what counts. Amen.